Fuck some baddies.
Welcome. We're Books and Baddies,
a reader's podcast for hotties who read hot books.
From YA slow burns to all out monster fucking.
Join us as we break down shame,
embrace sexuality,
chase those romance butterflies,
and find joy in literature that calls to us.
If you were that weird kid reading in the back of the classroom,
this podcast is for you, and it's for us, but it's for you.
It's also for you.
It's mainly for us, so we get to hang out. Which, by the way, baddies, we haven't talked in a minute. What's everybody reading? Give me your dish. Give me your tea.
All right. Hello, world. It's me, Mary, your favorite. I just finished Daydream by Hannah Grace. So to answer your question, Addie, nothing. I am reading nothing because I just finished a book. Tiff, what about you?
That's so real. I have been kind of in a slump, too. And so
I just read a book.
Breathe. At least you know how now.
No, you can absolutely breathe. Yeah. I just started What Moves the Dead by T. Kingfisher. I'm obsessed with her right now. And so now I'm on a mission to read everything that she's ever written forever.
I love that for you, Tiff. I'm Kelsey. I am right now listening to Down the Drain by Julia Fox. I don't know what it is, but a celebrity memoir with the audiobook done by them. Like, it just...
Yes.
So good. I can't stop. I started it yesterday and I cannot stop.
It's not Gilmore Girls fall. It's celebrity memoir. Audiobook.
Yeah, celebrity celebrity memoir audiobook.
Fall. Brat Girl Correct. Summer to celebrity audio memoir audiobook.
Memoir fall.
God, you know I live on TikTok and that's what comes to my brain first.
I didn't realize you were a celebrity memoir girly.
It's a new thing this year. I've only been doing audiobooks and I'm really into it. So like Jeanette McCurdy's I'm Glad My Mom Died, Britney Spears, Paris Hilton. I think Paris's was my favorite. It's just wild and I loved her.
She's slowly turning nonfiction on us.
Well, only celebrity audiobooks.
Boo. What
about Ina Garten? I need someone to also listen to Ina Garten's. And also, I just finished Kelly Bishop's, and that was so good too.
I listened to Ina Garten because I'm like pretty convinced she's not real. So I think it's just fiction.
Yeah, that's so true.
Well, I'm Lindsay and I'm a purist. So I'm reading some good fantasy, Masters of Death by Olivia Blake.
Yeah. Thank you, Lindsay.
Love.
You're keeping us together.
Like a good and proper baddie.
I'm doing my best.
Good and proper baddie.
Addie, what about you?
I'm Addie, and I just started the sequel to Better Than the Movies called Nothing Like the Movies by Lynn Painter. It's one of my highly anticipated of the year, so I'm really, really, really excited.
Cool.
Cross, we Love can that. Ask Yay. You. I forget you kind of are here sometimes.
Aw, that's so nice of you. I am reading Howl's Moving Castle by Diana Wynne Jones.
Oh my God.
I just got a nice edition from Fairy Loot, and it's beautiful.
Oh, just, and it's also gorgeous.
I
smart.
Haven't read it since I was a child or younger, much younger. And so I'm very excited.
So that's one of my favorite movies, and I haven't read it yet.
It is different.
It's very different.
Like most Ghibli. Yeah. Still very good. Yeah.
Do I read it or do I just stick with what I know?
I mean, you can read it. It's still good. It's just different.
Okay. Okay.
Is it like Lara Jean Netflix versus books different?
I don't know the answer to that question, but I
don't know that reference.
Hello, Margaret. Hello, okay. God. It's me, Margaret. It's me, Mary.
to all the boys I've loved before, the that books was, and movies
I
mean, there.
I know I want to watch those, so I can't tell you that, but
from a high level, all I'll say is that I think that they're their own unique things, and this is more of like a new fairy tale, like mythological kind of thing. It's very Beauty and the Beast-esque. Mm-hmm. It's super cool and very precious.
Is it scary or is it just...
No, it's very wholesome.
Kelsey, is Howl still hot?
Yeah,
is Howl still hot? Let me ask again. Is Howl still hot?
She wants to know.
It's important.
Are you going to put him on a certain cake?
Yeah.
Hot in the way that he's hot in the movie and that he's a sad boy who needs help.
Oh, maybe I should read
animated?
This.
He's kind of more of
animated.
A fun boy.
A little bit, but like even in the show, he's kind of a fuckboy. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, he's more of a fuckboy in the book though than he is in the movie.
Okay, maybe I'll give
him a rating instead. I might have to read this.
It's very good. It's also the first of three books in a series, I found out, because I didn't know that there were multiple.
There's a series? So, what the fuck?
There's two other books.
Yep. Oh my God.
This was not rapid fire. It never is. We cannot rapid fire to save our lives.
You guys had questions.
I wanted to know if he was cute, and also if he was fucked up, but also if he was fuckable, but also if he was a fuckboy.
Addie, yes, yes, and yes.
It checks all of Addie's boxes.
Yes. We need to do a baddie stream of all watching Howl's Moving Castle together.
And we're going to have to do this.
It's been decided.
But if you're not us, you have to pay to watch us watch it.
Yeah.
There we go. $5. Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Right, let's get started.
Let's hop in. So in our last episode, Lindsay, Kelsey, and I went on a deep dive on spooky books, and we created our very own patent pending spookometer. And we talked about why we enjoy or hate or stay really, really far away from horror books and scary books in general.
Yeah, I'm sticking with the fact that I'm still a Halloweenie, and I don't know if Lindsay feels the same way. I think Lindsay learned a little bit about herself.
Yeah, I actually had an incredible journey during that episode where I went in thinking I was a Halloweenie, and I definitely am in some respects. But I got some street cred, too, and learned that I'm a little bit less of a Halloweenie than I thought. So very exciting day for me.
I would like to request on behalf of the audience that we post the spookometer because I want to know this.
Ooh.
Please post.
Oh,
yeah, we can arrange that. I learned I am very much into spooky things as long as they're fucking. So no surprises there.
That sounds on track for you.
I was going to say, Mary, you and I will be spooked by the spookometer. So
yeah, really cool jump scare.
We'll have to just hold hands and everything will be fine when we look at it, but even the covers give me the little woogies.
Should they give you a wedgie?
The woogies like the woogies. I don't know, some people call them goosebumps, I call them the woogies, like the
but
woo-loo.
Lindsay's gonna give you a wedgie for being lame.
They give you a swirly.
Oh god no I just washed my hair.
Honestly, always being all over the board, it's kind of perfect for today's book. It's not spooky. It has this lovely balance of like romantic and macabre, and it's witty and cute. It has implications of darkness. And like the ultimate thing to pull in the Halloweeniest of us is that it is essentially a 90s rom-com starring our very own heartthrob and a baddie that is so hot. May the gods have mercy on you. That's right. I finally convinced everybody to read The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy by Megan Bannon, and I've never felt so powerful.
So powerful.
I'm so happy for
myself. A quick side story and a very large thank you to Tiff, because she convinced me to read The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy over a year ago, and which worked out because I'd accidentally met the author Megan Bannon at a book signing. I hadn't read her books yet. I didn't know who she was. She signed this bookmark for me that said, "To Kelsey, have a nice wholesome dinner. We'll get into the significance of that later." But I brought it up to Tiff and she was like, "What the fuck?"
I'll never not be jealous that you got to meet her. Like, that's so incredibly sick. That's so cool. I'm so envious forever and ever.
Yeah, I'm just so glad that I brought it up because you're the reason. I mean, I thought meeting Megan was cool. I wanted to read it because she was cool, but you were like, no, you need to read it. So I'm equally hyped that everyone else here has read it too.
I'm so happy. I'm so excited. Like, I feel like this book is the best case that you could ever make for judge a book by its cover, because it's so bright and beautiful, and it like perfectly signifies what the book is going to be. Like, it's got like the skeleton hands, but it's also like bright teal and hot pink. Like, it's not it's not that serious.
It ain't that deep.
But yeah, I read it in a single day, and I immediately started begging other people to read it, and now I have convinced at least four other people to read it, because Cross doesn't take my reading recommendations because he's elitist.
What the fuck, Cross?
Loser.
That's factually untrue, but okay.
Tiff, I read it on my phone in 48 hours, just so you know.
I'm so proud of you.
I was like, I couldn't wait. I was like, I gotta know. I got to know. Scroll.
That's awesome.
It was great.
I was the third to read it after Tiff and Kelsey convinced me to get on it. And then after we decided to do it for this podcast, and it was amazing. I'm sad that I slept on it for so long, but it was just, it was such a wonderful book and it was so fun, and we're really excited to chat about it today and get all of you baby baddies to read it, because it's a delight. and you're missing out if you haven't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is true.
So, Kelsey, being best friends with not only Katie Robert, but now apparently also Megan Bannon, I'm curious as to your thoughts about all these authors that you keep collecting in your pocket. Yeah.
I'm collecting them like Infinity Stones. No, I don't know what it is. Living in Kansas City is somehow like the hub for the romance genre. Everyone comes here and I love it.
Incredible.
But actually, fun fact, Megan does live in Kansas City. So that's why I got extra, extra lucky. But let me be everyone's Wikipedia mommy real quick and read to you a little bit of background on who Megan is. This is a letter she handwrote me about herself and not at all just her website bio. So let me lay it out for you. Megan Bannon, she's a USA Today bestselling author of award-winning speculative fiction. Her work has been selected for the RUSA Reading List, the Indies Introduce List, and the Kids Indie Next List, along with numerous Best of the Year compilations. As a former public librarian, Slay, we love, she has spent most of her professional career behind a reference desk, but she's also sold luggage, written grants, collected a few graduate degrees from various Kansas universities, and taught English at home and abroad. We love an accomplished woman.
Hot.
It's amazing, it's hot, and it's cool.
A few degrees? That's amazing.
Like casual.
Like how many is
she's
a few?
So cool.
Like,
that's so librarian of her.
It's so librarian.
So librarian. She lives in the Kansas City area with her family and more pets than is reasonable. Her words, not mine. I think there's no such thing. Keep getting your pets, girl. And she does a lot of events with the local bookstore Under the Cover, which is Kansas City's romance bookstore. Amaze. And I will note that her first books were YA or like kids books. And she's recently moved into new adult with this series and her future writing. She's having a lot of fun with. So that's our girl. That's my other best friend.
You got so many friends.
So popular.
You're so popular. Honestly, like it does not surprise me to find out that she has the most like pets ever. From the way that she talks about dogs in this book, and then also in the sequel, how she talks about like animals in general and their behavior, it does not surprise me to find out.
And
that
that's
she
when
has
you know
many,
I liked
pets.
The book is when there was dogs,
which is like the second page. So,
and I liked it on the second page already.
Can confirm.
The big question is, how will you know that this particular Megan Bannon book, The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy, is right for you? The baddies. Including me, not Cross. He doesn't work. Put together a little short questionnaire to help you decide. So number one, do you like Western romance, but with zombies, a not so sterile morgue, and a curvy pinup queen who's got the not so secret hots for a demigod?
Sure do.
Yeah.
Yes.
Good. Of course. Good. So far, so good.
Do you like, okay, next, do you like tiny animals who are sometimes alcoholic that deliver your mail with questionable customer service and a bit of toot?
I do.
Every time.
I do.
Or
of
be course returning I do. It. Yes. Yeah.
Do you like brooding men who stare at the fire and drink whiskey out of a tin cup?
Sure.
Yep. Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I will take
likewise.
Did you recently discover that you have the hots for cowboy hats?
Yes.
Yeehaw. Yeah, I didn't know absolutely. That until now, actually.
Yes.
Yeehaw.
Do you Yeehaw. Love when men talk about how they want to worship your body? I assume yes, because you're
yes.
listening to this yes. podcast.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. This podcast is in fact for you.
Do you think about boobs
daily?
Because I do.
Yes. Cross
sometimes.
So, daily. The characters. Do you, Crossland? Answer. Answer for the audience.
What?
Say it, Howard. Do you think about boobs?
Yes.
Do you know what they are?
Who doesn't?
Great. Moving on.
Gross.
Do you wish you lived in a tiny apartment with a large soaker tub and a giant dog that suffocates you with love every evening?
Oh, yeah. I just moved away from that. But yes, I do love that.
I just love a baby.
Do you love reading in-depth details about how bodies are prepared for the afterlife?
Spooky.
I didn't know I did until now. Yes.
It is October.
But yes.
Do you like contemplating death?
God damn it.
Cross.
Jesus Christ, Cross.
God damn it, Cross.
Do you ever
Cross.
Think about Cross dying? What? The vibes.
What?
Do you need help?
Do you think
Blink
about
twice.
Your appendix
yeah.
fairly often?
Actually, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
I really do.
Actually, yes. Really do. I'm always waiting for it to burst, to be honest. I'm like, today's yeah. the day. Do you hyperfixate on Pride and Prejudice 2015 and the Ben and Jerry scene from Aquamarine?
Of course.
Yes.
Mary, how'd you know?
Literally, right?
Like, inside of my brain. Do you frequently think about saving a dog more than you think about saving a human life? Because I do.
Yeah, we know. We know you do, Addy. Yes.
Easily.
Yes,
of course. We know, Addy.
Just me.
Do you not like your dad? Also, or do you love your dad? Do you think about the concept of dad?
If you think about dad, you should read this book.
Yes. Do you romanticize functioning alcoholism as well?
Crossland. You literally made a show about getting drunk.
I mean, it's just a function of the show. It's not the whole
like
thing.
Just like functioning.
His face is still right after we asked him about boobs.
He's still thinking about them boobs.
I haven't recovered.
Mm-hmm. Are you an eldest daughter with the weight of your family's business and emotional labor resting on your strong but fairly fragile shoulders?
Yeah,
poor Mercy.
How'd you know? I've never had a unique experience.
No,
I know because we have a group chat.
Yeah.
Addy, you are the eldest daughter in your family.
Yes,
true.
You are. You goofball. I'm the only one that you're the only one who technically
I feel like
isn't,
I am. But you are probably the one who embodies the most.
Who does? Yeah,
you are also very.
Hey, Sarah listens to this, and she will disagree.
So. Well, sorry, Sarah.
Sorry, Sarah. You're out.
I'm also not the eldest daughter, just for the record.
We know, Cross,
but
Scott.
He acts like one, okay. So it's fine.
I don't know. He acts pretty baby sister. I think.
No, you're right. You're right.
You take
Tiff.
That back. You take that back.
Okay, anyway, back to Mercy.
Not you.
Next, are you also chronically late for work?
Don't
tell my manager. I'm so sorry.
I've never been on time.
Do you wish that you were gathered around a candlelit dining room with mismatched chairs and mason jars, devouring a wholesome meal made by your brother and your sister's sweet, sweet green flag of a husband?
Yes,
I wish.
I love that. I want that.
Invite
so bad.
Me.
Doesn't it sound cozy?
Kind of sounds so like my cozy. House, actually. You kind of grouchy.
Yeah. I'm grouchy.
Constantly.
Just every a little grouchy. If you're grouchy, you might want to read this book.
I think the most important one, though, is you wish you lived in New York and ran a children's bookstore that was maybe going out of business because of Tom Hanks and his adorable brother and niece?
Wait, what? Yeah. Well,
wait.
Yeah, that's really sad. But, hey, if you like all these things, do we have a show? For you,
Can I just chime in with the fact that Esther, the green onion, was part of my sexual awakening? Because it's a fact, and she was.
Also, yes, she's unreasonably hot, especially
for a vegetable. I feel like I'm also unreasonably hot for a vegetable.
You are just unreasonably hot. You don't even have to be a vegetable.
I was waiting for someone to say that. Thank you, Tiff.
But speaking of unreasonably hot, happy Meg Ryan fall to all who celebrate, which is all of you.
Yeah, I do celebrate. I celebrate so deeply.
I was going to say, this is our favorite topic. And this is like, I'm kicking my feet like a child because
yes,
we have to talk about the You've Got Mail comparison and the way that Megan Bannon did it literally perfectly, where I was like screaming and kicking my feet because of all of the little comparisons. And cute. Mary, we got to talk about this. I feel like you and I are the Meg Ryan girlies. Like, we are the You've Got Mail girlies. Like, I watch it like once a month because it's my comfort movie and I love it. And if I'm on a plane, I'm watching it.
It's multi-seasonal.
Yes. People are like, oh, I just started watching Gilmore Girls in the fall. I'm like, I watch it all the time. Like, this is me with You've Got Mail.
Other times are
like, okay.
Absolutely.
We have many things to talk about.
It is Meg Ryan fall, but it's not just fall.
Yes, anyways, it's Meg Ryan year. I think the first thing we got to talk about is the date where, and I'll use it in the movie terms because that's just how I'm going to think about it, is where Tom Hanks shows up for the date with his pen pal lover, however you want to call her. Mm-hmm. And Meg Ryan is sitting at the table reading Pride and Prejudice, and he's standing outside with his friend and going, oh my God, it is her. And he knows it the whole time and she has no idea. And the way that The Undertaker of Heart and Mercy fell back on that and did the almost identical replica scene just in the different world was probably like one of my favorite scenes in this whole book.
I completely agree. I think Tiff told me beforehand that it was a You Got Mail retelling. But when that scene really happened. I just like slammed my book down and I was like, are you kidding me? This is happening right now. And especially because kind of like what Addie was saying, like this date scene, it so beautifully replicates it without being a ripoff. Let me clarify. Like this was its own beautiful thing, but you felt the cozy warmth of that candlelit cafe. And you also felt the anticipation and slight internal dread of knowing how it's going to go. Because if you've seen You've Got Mail, like it doesn't go great. And you really want it to. So that's the part that kind of sucks. But I love that. I'm sure Addie said the same thing, I think. But the fact that there are so many parallels, including like having the book on the table. And I'm trying to remember, Addie, because in the movie You Got Mail, she has like a rose too, right? Did Mercy have a flower? I can't recall.
I can't remember either, but in You've Got Mail, she has a rose. And then we also have to talk about the fact that in You've Got Mail, she is holding Pride and Prejudice. And Pride and Prejudice is like her book, and she talks about it all the time. And then when she's in Mercy's sitting at the cafe, she's also reading a book. And the book is also mentioned like throughout very clearly the rest of the book. Like, it's clearly...
Yeah.
I think the book in... And Tiff, you are the detail queen on this one. Is the book in... Heart and Mercy, is it called like Enemies to Lovers or something?
Yes, yeah, it literally is.
Like that. Yes. Yeah, it's super fun. Yeah. And just there's so many little other things like the annoying corporation that's trying to buy out the little family run business.
FOX.
Yes, I was waiting for a scene where it was something about FOX or like, which again, I could talk about this movie for years. So someone's going to just shut me up soon. But
no, never.
Was literally like the annoying boyfriend who just wanted someone to stroke his ego. But, you know, like she was better than that. And she knew it the whole time. And there's just, I don't know, I could go on and on about this forever. I literally highlighted stuff and like marked it as like, You've Got Mail. And then I watched the movie right after.
Good. Yes, absolutely. And also like the really obvious parallel, of course, with You've Got Mail. This is a letter writing romance. So they, you know, NY152. Is heart. Spoilers. Sorry, guys. But, you know, they end up discovering that they are each other's pen pals, and they build that relationship kind of on screen, aka through email or letters. And then while they have this burning hate slash kind of deep horniness for each other in person. Some other things that I thought were really cute, despite the fact that like Mercy owned the, so in the movie, Tom Hanks owns the dog, but Mercy got to own the dog in this one. But the love of dogs runs deep in Meg Ryan Fall and also in The Undertaking of Heart and Mercy. So if you're a dog girly, this one's for you.
The other thing that runs through the whole concept is that, and we'll talk about it later too, is that even when they're pen pals and they like, or even I guess when they know who each other is, it's like, oh crap, we're supposed to be rivals, or like we're supposed to hate each other, but we don't. And that's something that also I saw like the replication from Heart and Mercy and You've Got Mail. And I just feel like that was the biggest thing. Like, I just kept going back to that.
Yeah. And then the family structures, too. So, like, Fox in You've Got Mail, like, has a really interesting family dynamic. His dad's been remarried, like, 4 times. His brother is, like, 30 years younger than him. But his aunt is, like, you know, also 20 years younger than him or whatever.
It's kind of, he's got a lot going on.
I'm his brother. I'm his aunt. Whatever. And it's kind of strange. And you can tell he just kind of looks in on... Oh my God, what is Meg Ryan's character's name? Good gravy. You know who I'm talking about. It's Meg Ryan. Moving on. She just has this like beautiful found family in the bookshop that she's loved, and the one that her mom passed down to her, like Mercy with her dad and his morgue. So it's a family business through and through. And you can just tell like when Fox looks in on all of that, like there's a warmth for it, a love for it, but also it's competition. And
Kathleen Kelly.
Kathleen Kelly. That's her Thank name. You, Kelsey. Yes.
Mary, I think you and I could probably talk about this forever, but I feel like for the sake of all of the other baddies, I feel like maybe we move on and then I'll just call you after this.
Yeah. And we're also probably not the only ones who've seen You've Got Mail in this chat. So if anyone has any other things to say.
I just love how much you two love that movie. When we were talking about this book, you two were so excited about it. So I love that we got Addie, Mary, You Got Mail time.
And I can go into it later too, but it like made this... For context, I am scared of everything. I am sleep with nightlights still. I'm scared of everything. And this made it less spooky. And we'll talk about it later when I talk about my rating. But just the You've Got Mail tie-ins were like, oh, You've Got Mail. And it became less spooky for me.
Yep. Yeah. Same. 100%. So Thank sweet. You for your time, everyone, one and all. Please read this book.
Well, treat people with kindness.
In the conversation that we were just having, I heard y'all mention a couple different tropes and things that link You've Got Mail to this wonderful book that we've all just read. Pretty quick, if our listeners want to hit up this book, what kind of tropes can they expect?
I think that like the most obvious one that like is the easiest to describe is that it's very Grumpy Sunshine. Like so Grumpy Sunshine. Like, wow, Heart sure is grumpy. And his first meeting with Mercy, she's wearing like a yellow dress. So like, I think it's pretty baked in there to be Grumpy Sunshine.
Yeah, absolutely. I have a controversial opinion in that this trope at large is not for me, and I think it's super overdone. But that being said, I think it worked really well in this book. I thought it was cute. I appreciate that they were both grumpy and both sunshine at times. More on the grumpy side of things. And sometimes it even felt like grumpy versus grumpy instead, at least like when they're interacting with each other. Because usually I feel like you see the sunshine just kind of being sunshiny no matter what grumpy is doing. And I appreciated that Mercy's way of reacting to his grumpy was just to be, you know, just to kind of be a mirror and be like, oh, you want to act like this? All right, we're going to act like this. See how you like it. And I appreciated that. And that they, it felt like they both had a bit more depth than I think I'm personally used to seeing or feeling in a Grumpy Sunshine romance.
No, I agree too. And I think I am someone who loves this trope, and I've been reading a lot of it lately. And I think it kind of gets predictable and kind of becomes overly played up, where like there's obviously the grumpy cowboy and then there's the sunshiny girl who's works in social media or something. Like, you know what I mean? And it's very obvious. And I think what I liked about this was that it flipped the trope back and forth depending on the scene and depending on who had something going on in their life, and it became less predictable. And I think the way that you said it, like it almost became grumpy or like mirrored behavior, is the best I've ever heard it explained.
I want to add on to that because Mercy like has angst too. She's just like what Lindsay was saying, she's a very complex sunny girl, but she has shit going on.
And
I completely agree. Like, I loved the attitude she'd throw back pretty much at anybody, and that she at the end of the day, her sunshine only lasted so long, and all she wanted to do was go home, read a book, and fuck off. And I admire it.
Amen. Yes. Which, speaking of that angst, I feel like we mentioned it, but enemies to lovers is absolutely a trope here. Not just the book that Mercy's reading, but part of this book as well.
Yeah, we all love enemies to lovers. I have met very few people who don't. I just wish they'd flesh out a bit more why Heart hates Mercy so much. Like, I hate all Undertakers doesn't really make sense. Also, he doesn't hate all Undertakers because he gets along fine with the other ones, considering he works closely with like a bunch of them. And so it just felt a little to me like, I don't know, rushed, forced, maybe. It worked. And I didn't really give a shit at the end of the day. But I wish there was just a little bit more of like the why behind the hate, because that makes the love later much more sweeter. And I missed out a bit.
Yeah. Heart, I need you to remember your why.
That's a teacher's joke.
That's a sleeper code that you just activated in me. And now I have to go. I have to go.
No, but Lindsay, I completely agree. Because there would be moments I'd be reading this book, which I absolutely adored. And I'd like kind of put it down and I'd be like, what's his problem again? Like, what? Why? And it felt a little rushed. And it seemed almost like there was a prequel I was missing, because he hated the Undertakers because his boss mentor man, who had passed away, unfortunately, like also hated them. So it was like inherited hatred, and it was very loosey goosey, and I couldn't quite understand it. Tiff, is there a prequel, or did I just miss a huge chunk of narrative?
Yeah. So without getting like too like into the weeds with it, because like I have read this book. Jesus, I don't even want to think about how many times I've read this book. It's probably unhealthy, to be quite honest.
No, no, you're having fun. It's healthy if you're having fun.
Oh, yeah?
It's great.
Is that the metric?
That's my metric, y'all.
My therapist would not agree.
If you're having fun, it's healthy.
I do have fun with it. It's a book that I like always have downloaded on my Kindle, and I always have downloaded the audiobook on my phone, because it's like my default thing. Anyway, the like first meeting between Heart and Mercy goes like so weird and bad. The way that Heart is introduced to Mercy, at first he's like, damn, this bitch is so hot. I'm gonna risk it all for an Undertaker. They can't all be that bad. And then everything goes terribly awry in that first meeting. And then that on top of like his mentor saying that they are only in it for the money, and then Mercy like responding to that and becoming angry. Cause I think part of what I like about Mercy too is that she's a sunshine, but she has such a temper. Yeah. And so she, you know, she has a response to
heart. I can relate to that.
Weird. Right.
It's such a mood.
And then it is such a mood. And then, yeah, it just kind of spirals from there. And it's, I saw somebody refer to this as a meet angry and not a meet cute.
Yes. And like, it's on, it's wait, a Goodreads review. I'm obsessed with that review. It's meet so angry. Real.
It's so like good. That. And I think that like that is more what happened. It's less enemies in the traditional sense, and it's more acquaintances who are unreasonably hot and also not nice, just like in a not nice kind of way. And did I mention also that they're like unreasonably hot and I can't get along with them, and that sucks because I want to fuck so bad. And so
that's like it so becomes funny,
like this loop of like, oh my god, they're so hot but I can't smash because I have to hate them out of principle.
Smash.
Forbidden to smash. And then it kind of just kind of spirals from there because it's that like meet angry, and so they get off on the wrong foot.
Well, and Tiff, it kind of goes back to the idea of like, we're supposed to be rivals. Like, it,
yeah.
Okay, I'm whatever I have to drink. Draco and Hermione, Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling.
I'll drink for you, cheers.
I was going to say, someone drink for me. But they're supposed to be rivals, but they love each other. But they're supposed to be rivals, so they are like, oh, I'm supposed to hate this person. It's like when you see a band that you've always said that you've hated, but you actually kind of like the band. And so you're like, oh yeah, I definitely don't know the name of the song, but you know the name of the song, and like, you know, all the lyrics, and you know what the TikTok trend for it. Like they, that was very oddly specific. I'm very sorry. But like, I feel like they both are, their banter is almost like a little giggly and almost like so perfectly put into these little boxes because it's funny. And it just, it's like, we're supposed to be rivals. Like, we're supposed to hate each other. It's like, we're just going to be cute and like banter. That's the enemies to lovers that I'm seeing, is like cute little banter, supposed to be rivals. I don't know.
I just think they're both really stubborn. They're just too stubborn to get over hating each other. I love it. They're unmoving.
I adore what you said about the meet angry, because I'm trying to like rack my brain about my favorite rom-coms, and it's like, it's always meet cute. And then they realize they're rivals that are supposed to hate each other. And now it's like, meet angry, and we're not really rivals. We just work in the same sphere of job, but I can't fuck you, and that's annoying. That's so cute. Yeah. I love that.
I'm truly trying to track down. Okay, I think I did find it.
I was just going to say, we need to track down that Goodreads review, because like, I need, that person changed my brain chemistry.
Same. Her name's Hannah B. She has a NetGalley review and a Goodreads review. It's the only thing I can find on the internet. And thank you, know you, Hannah. Me, Wikipedia mommy. I've got it. She called it a meet angry, and I fucking love that. So thank you. Thank you, Hannah B.
Thanks, Hannah B.
Hannah B. Thank you, Hannah. You are God's bravest soldier.
Another trope we talked about a little bit earlier, too, is that they're both writers, as they write love letters to each other.
Sorta.
I think this is one of my favorite tropes ever. You know those books that have enough going on in them that they distract both sides of your brain? And so it's like, oh, well, I'm reading their letters, but also I'm reading what they're doing. That's how I feel about books where they're writing letters. I think the other big one that I always think about is Divine Rivals, which is like one of my favorite books of, I think, last year, or maybe it was this year. Time is not real.
Did you recommend that to me?
I did, because it's 1940s World War II coded.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lindsay. I owe you a thank you note, handwritten.
I'm waiting.
But I genuinely think like this is something that I will always read. I feel like there's a few baddies who feel like this too.
Yes. And Addie, I love books with letter writing. And if you're a good girl, if you're well behaved, I came up with some recs to mention later in the episode. If you're on your best behavior, you'll get a little treat, and I'll list those.
Little treat,
please.
Yeah. Addie can have a little treat.
I just wanted to take 30 seconds of everybody's time to acknowledge that I took off the dust covers of my Divine Rivals 1 and Divine Rivals 2 Electric Boogaloo and put them on my shelf, and they're so pretty. So if you have not looked at your Divine Rivals under the dust cover, pull up the blanket. You'll be really happy with what you see.
Peek under the covers, as they say.
Excellent.
Peek under the covers. Yeah, that's what I meant to say.
Isn't that the name of Kelsey's bookstore?
You know, I think that sometimes letter writing for me can feel a little bit forced, or I don't know, just like insincere mm-hmm. or a way for the author to speed up the plot with effectively like exposition, but in kind of a different way.
Yeah.
And they did it really well here, and they do it well in Divine Rivals, which I love. But speaking of tropes that can sometimes be super annoying, at least for me, and I think we're all on the same page with this one. There was a third act miscommunication in this book, but for fucking once, it didn't suck. And I think that's amazing.
It didn't Yay. Suck.
Yay. Yay.
Yay. Incredible.
And thank you, Megan Bannon.
An incredible feat of writing. Good job, Megan. Yeah, it was, shall we say, heartbreaking. Spelled like his
that
name.
Made me laugh.
Nice. Nice. And it wasn't either yeah. of them like necessarily being like pig-headed, or it wasn't necessarily, I mean, it could have been solved by just communicating, but like, for once, it wasn't like, why the fuck didn't you just talk about this? Like, I could actually see their points of view.
Right.
Yeah. And that was really refreshing. That was mm-hmm. very refreshing for me.
I totally agree. I think that you're super spot on that, like, it could have been solved with communication, but also, like, it hit me so hard to be in Hart's head and know, like, how much he wanted to tell her and just, like, couldn't bring himself to because he didn't want to ruin it. Like, at first, it was because he was just kind of being shitty because he's like, there's no way that it's actually her. She's too hot and mean and I hate her, but I also want to fuck so bad. But eventually, like, it gets to this point where they go from like hating each other to like he's in love immediately. And mm-hmm. it's so like, I think, kind of easy to relate to, of like the idea of, you know, you have to do something, but you know that it's going to be painful. So you keep putting it off. And it just yeah. never
like going to the dentist.
Right time.
Yeah. Yes, Addy.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
I guess.
Addy, do you need You're to go to the dentist?
I do. Don't tell my mom.
Okay. Well, we'll remind you later. Well, sounds good. No, I think what my favorite part about all that, and Tiff, you said it too, but like, he's so immediately in love, asking her to, well, I don't want to spoil it too much, but their romance is so sweet. And all of a sudden it just kind of grinds to a halt because of this like sticky situation, right? But here's why I will give praise as well. I love that despite that her family could be very like a family, when she wanted to set that boundary at that dinner scene and she was like, the fuck, you fucking lied to me. They all just immediately went like, and just like eyes on him. Like if Mercy says, then which is interesting because I feel like a lot of families, especially with them, because they all think they know what's best for her. They could have been like, oh, hear him out, sweetie. Like, he's so sweet. He is a big, strong cutie man. We'll just take him side anyway. So I don't know. I really appreciated that piece. So yes, the third act miscommunication trope didn't suck. And also, thank you, Megan, for making her family rock in that particular moment. Good on you. Way to go. Props.
Yeah. I feel like that like family aspect is really well used in this. Like it is. It's rediscovered family, and also it kind of gives found family overall. Mm-hmm. Like I think that for Mercy, it's very much like rediscovering the love that she has for her family. Not the love, but the like for her family.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
You know how you, like, when I was a kid, I'm sure I've brought this up on the show before and, like, personally, but when I was a kid, one of the things that my mom taught me that, like, has stuck with me a lot is that you can love somebody and not like them for a mm-hmm. while. And yeah. I think that we see that in Mercy.
Yep.
And then we also see, like, a little bit of found family then with Hart as he kind of gets, like, brought into Mercy's family, into the bird stalls, and also with Duckers, because Duckers yes. is so cute and
I
silly.
Love
I love
him.
He just loves yeah. Hart so much.
Yeah, I agree. I think that the rediscovering family piece really just spoke to me because she got to not only like find her voice and figure out what she wanted, but also communicate it with them so that they can all be like friends again. Mm-hmm. Friends within their family, which is sometimes hard to do. So they crushed it. And I just think that Hart was absolutely born to sit around their family's dining room table and share a meal with them. He seemed perfectly fit for that. So,
yeah.
Thank you, Lindsay.
So I don't know about y'all, but like we've talked about it before, how much I love like an urban fantasy kind of thing. And I want to know what y'all's like feelings on Tanria, like the setting, like the world of this is, because I know Tanria isn't super described other than that it's like this territory in the Federated Islands of Cadmus and that it's blocked off by the rest of the continent. That's kind of all we get. And like that's stuff that you see from looking at the map. So like, what did we feel about this like not super described fantasy land?
I just loved how weird the world Megan created was. Like it was mm-hmm. macabre and magical and just... surprised me. There was enough like underdevelopedness that I got to like, my imagination got to fill in some blanks, if that sort of makes sense to anyone. But I felt like I hadn't existed in a world like Megan's before, and I was sucked in because of that.
Kelsey, I feel the same. I also was 2 days years old where I learned how to say all those names, because in my mind, they're just like little gibberish words that I recognize how they're spelled every time. I know this is not a unique experience. The TikTok girlies understand me too. I really liked the lack of world building, and I think that it's because I got to imagine how I wanted it. And I think that you have it exactly right. Like in my head, I had it a certain way. Like it was fall in New York, but also little Gilmore Girls, weirdly, but also it was desert and there was sand and westerns and cowboy hats, but there were zombies. And it was also, I don't even know, just like I saw this thing on TikTok a few, maybe weeks ago, I guess at this point, where someone said, like, if you look too closely into it, you won't fall in love with it. And that's exactly how I feel about it, because I was like vibrating enough to imagine my own world. And I think that's so cool.
Yeah. Sorry. I was just thinking about what you were saying about like how it's New York, but also Western. I was thinking like, it's like if a very small neighborhood in Brooklyn was picked up and like dropped into Death Valley, and then like 200 years later, their population decreased by like, I don't know, a 20th. And then they were all just there. But I'm pretty sure the Western part for me was like, there's definitely suede in this world. You know, he definitely has spurs on his boots. And I am like 99.9% sure that Megan wrote about like the dust rolling across the prairie at one point. And I think there's the double doors that he like busts through at least 4 times. So
there should have been a cowboy.
He's a cowboy who fights zombies, but he also likes to go get coffee. So he's contains multitudes, and I love it.
I have to strongly disagree with what everyone's just said. I wish there was more world building. I love world building. It actually really frustrated me that there wasn't a lot of world building in this book. Things like the Equimera, the Auto Duck sounded super cool, but there was like no detail about what they were or looked like or how they fit in or how you like worked one or what was the system behind it and that kind of stuff. But I wanted to know, because for me, that's fun. And for me, that's like more creative for the author. Mm. Otherwise, it can kind of just feel like I took this story and changed everybody's names. Which I don't think was necessarily the case in this book, but is how I feel about like some Hades and Persephone retellings, for example, right? They're like, I literally just took this story and changed the names, or maybe even didn't. And that was the extent of my like creative process. It left me wanting more, but not in a good way. And maybe you get more in the sequel, and that would be really fun. I don't know if I agree with the concept of like, if you look too close, you're not going to fall in love, because the more and more like attached I get to the world, the more I want to know more. And I think that's why I love things like Harry Potter or Game of Thrones or Red Rising, or those, you know, kind of chunkier, those chunky fantasy sci-fi books where there is like a very concrete world and it's very concrete how everything works in it. Plus, this world sounded really fucking cool, and I just wanted her to tell us more about it.
Yeah. Give us the detail, Megan, damn it.
I 100% agree. I love Tanria. I want to know everything about it. I want somebody's day-to-day journal, like a random person in Tanria's day-to-day journal. That's what I want. I want to know everything about it. I want to know every little detail. I will say that in the sequel, which is The Undermining of Twyla and Frank that just came out this year, there is further world building, and there are some more details that get added to the world. And then I assume that we'll get even more in the third book that's coming out next year, which is called The Undercutting of Rosie and Adam.
Hell yeah.
Cute. If you can sense a theme here.
I sure can.
Yeah, but there is a lot more world building. Twyla and Frank are actually mentioned briefly in Heart and Mercy. And then you kind of get like to know them so much more in the second book. It's great. I love more world building. Please tell me everything. I need
give
to know
us
everything.
More.
Yeah, it's just the world she created is very interesting, right? It's a place where like underwire bras and bubble baths and sneakers exist. And there's also zombies and magic and demigods and talking animals working for the post office. I guess I don't know if I even like felt like what she did was world building at times. It felt like, I don't know, it kind of felt like she like doodled on a piece of paper and then was like, all right, so here's what we're working with. And that made me sad. And I think that becomes most obvious in this conversation when we're both talking about the very different vibes that we have for how we picture the world, which I think is fun. I like that we all are able to kind of have our own picture of what it looks like.
Too.
But like, it's so funny to me to hear like
that it could be like kind of a Gilmore Girls situation, or like an even like urban fantasy situation, or multiple different ways that other people are seeing it. Because to me, it felt very like English countryside.
What?
That's so interesting.
No way.
It felt like they were in this little like town in the middle of like a field, and that like, you know, they had to like travel across these rolling plains to get to because Megan didn't tell us. So.
That's like something that I feel like we could have an entire episode on. It's because I think that's why I love books. Like, that's why I love it, is that like we all live our lives and everything, and I think about something one way and someone else thinks about something else another way, and I'm thinking Gilmore Girls and someone else is thinking New York and someone else is thinking English countryside. I will say there's one thing and one thing only, is that I fully believe that Bryce Quinlan from Crescent City, Sarah J. Maas, would just like pop in for a drink in this book, because that's just the vibe I'm getting.
Yeah, I think she and Mercy would get along like so well. And then I think that Hart and Hunt would have like a man off. And it would be hilarious to see which man with the H name Hart wins. And I think that Mercy and Bryce would just like encourage
May
it.
The best H man win.
Mercy and Bryce would just like encourage it and be like, this is hilarious. Yeah. Just, you know, like,
absolutely.
Continue on.
I'm glad you understand me.
Oh, yeah. Totally.
It's the Converse.
It truly it really is.
Who says I can't wear my Converse?
Well, I'm wrapping dead bodies, but maybe.
What is that? That's
drop
just Mercy.
Drop the EP.
Demi Lovato, you guys.
Thank you, Mary.
I don't know that reference.
Camp Rock.
Oh, okay. Cool.
I think Camp Lindsay Rock. Got it. Tiff missed it.
I didn't.
I got it. I know it.
Oh, sorry.
I know Camp Rock.
Sorry, Kelsey.
Camp Rock.
I wasn't saying you didn't. It's also not Camp Rock, though. It's her.
No, it's just her own song.
It's random music.
Anyway.
Camp Rock.
This is what you get from me.
Anyway. All right. So moving away from Megan Bannon's world building, or lack thereof of world building, the other question I kind of have for you guys is, the book flip-flops between Hart's perspective and Mercy's perspective. Did you have one that you enjoyed more? And if so, why? Personally, for me, I'm going to answer my own question. Mercy is my fashion icon, the love of my life, the pin-up hottie with a body. So,
so true.
I did have a preference, but I just want to know yours.
I think I'm with you, Mary. She's just such a fucking cutie. And I'm normally so like, when there's dual POV, I love a lady. I love a lady's POV. I love listening to like the man's POV as they slowly descend into obsession. But like most of the time, I'm with the girly pop. I'm with Mercy on this one.
She does give like oldest daughter troubles, but also oldest daughter confidence at the same time. Like, weight of the family business is on her shoulders, but she also has this, but she's also unsure if she has this. And I think that it's refreshing when you see both sides of that. So I really liked her too. Yeah. I think Hart was really interesting because I never knew where it was going. Like, I could never predict what was going to happen when I was reading his chapters. But I think Mercy were the chapters I was looking forward to.
I appreciated that her younger sister, even though she definitely, like you said, had that older sister energy, I appreciate that her sister called her out on her letter writing. And called her out that she was, you know, presenting this curated version of herself, even if she thinks that she's being more herself in writing the letters, which could also be true, right? But it's still a version of yourself that you can edit and kind of polish up before you send it out. And so I appreciated that Mercy took that to heart and really like took it to heart. really like you know, took that. And I think she's a very thoughtful, mindful person, and so when she heard that feedback, she was like, oh my god, you're totally right. Also, I don't care, and I'm gonna do it. I appreciated that whole timeline and that whole character arc.
Yeah, she's so eldest daughter syndrome. But I really liked watching, I think similar to you, Lindsay, I really liked watching her get more comfortable with speaking up and saying what's on her mind, because like that is something that she kind of struggled with at the beginning. Like she's keeping all of these secrets and stuff. And I just really liked seeing her, you know, get more and more confident.
Me too. And the way that she sticks up for herself when it comes to her wants, like her wishes for her family. Like, it's funny because it's like her family was trying to oldest daughter syndrome her back. They were all trying to do what they thought was better for the other person, instead of just communicating their needs and their wants. And like a lot of the story is her coming to terms with the fact that like, I have to actually state my wishes and fight for them and find a way to make them happen, because everybody thinks I'm doing it for them. Which is so funny because she must have had such a big pattern of sacrificing her own wishes for others that the one thing she didn't want to sacrifice, everyone was trying to take away from her because they thought that they were doing what was right for her. So it was really interesting. It was such a good way to write family. And that's why I just like loved her perspective of all of it, because we are human and I can relate. I don't know.
Mary, I think it was really refreshing too, to have someone who girl bossed and was confident in her decisions and stuck up for herself. And she wasn't like Aelin from Throne of Glass, where like, it's obviously her, you know, coming of age story. Like, you're getting Sarah J. Maas vibes, but in a romance book, or like in a spooky romance book, if that's what you want to call it. Or I don't know. Do we call this horror tiff?
I respect whatever label you want to use. Addie.
Whatever label we want to put on it.
I respect whatever label you want to put on it. Except if you put it, if you say horror, I will quit this show.
Spooky
horror.
Romance.
Okay, so spooky romance. Off right now.
It's could it be the Halloweeny meter?
Yes. Like it's so refreshing to read a romance book or a book with romance, or however you want to say it, a book with smut in it, where she's not like, oh no, I need saving because some man told me not to do this. And I've been reading a lot of books like this, and I'm just like, oh my god, I get it. And this was the first book where I was like, you go girl. Like, she sticks up for herself and what she wants. I'm a Leo,
Mercy.
Can you tell?
Mercy.
No.
Yeah, she had some really wonderful self-aware monologues to that effect that I really appreciated reading. They were, you know, she was just cute and she was jaunty without being overdone or unrealistic. And it very much felt like, I think most of the people reading this book would relate to her in some sense.
Yeah, I appreciated her feminist queen mentality. I think it was a lot of insight to me for Megan, the author, of how she views the world, which I appreciated a lot. And then we've said it, but I'll say it again. Mercy's a girl boss, respectfully. And I love that.
So true. Lean in, girl boss. No, but I do love that she's genuinely passionate about her job. When usually the female main character we get is working like a dead end gig that they hate or working like something.
Dead.
Lol. Or working like a top floor skyscraper corporate job that they love or hate. And I like that this was just like the family biz, and it was a genuine passion for her. That was really lovely.
Well, and I like that she had to work through some of the gender expectations you know, put on her by her family, especially within her job and her business and her passion for it.
And within society, because that was a societal expectation too.
I loved that. I enjoyed that journey.
They're different opinion. We talked a lot about how Hart didn't like Mercy's job, but I think it was so interesting reading Mercy's perspective of her like wanting to honor the dead and being the last person that they see before she like closes their eyes and says the prayers for them. It was so beautiful. My very sweet girl. Love her. Protect her at all costs.
Yeah. I would be interested to know like who Megan Bannon talked to about the death industry, because like from people who I know and love who have been involved in the death industry, like it is extremely like accurate. Like, they do not take that lightly. They do not. It is not like a for funsies job. It is very much a respectful, this is the last thing that we can give to the grieving families and that we can give to this real human person. And so I would be curious to know, like who did she talk to? Like, that she gained such a like a beautiful respect
reverence
for that practice. Yeah, reverence is a good word for it. Yeah, totally.
It is.
Can we move out of this deep conversation and I can talk about Hart?
I was waiting for this.
Let's do that.
So
my heart is racing in anticipation.
Oh my god, same. I do love Mercy, and I don't know. I love the whole book. It's hard to pick. It's like it's so difficult to pick. But like, I really liked Hart's kind of descent into obsession with Mercy, and I thought that was so fun to read. So I personally really enjoyed reading Hart's chapters, aka my other man who has a name that starts with H and ends in T.
I am not proud of how long I stared at that before we started recording to be like, who is she talking about?
Hunt!
No, I know that now.
Hey, Mary, what's a word that starts with F and ends with uck?
Fire truck.
Fire truck.
Nice.
That's stupid. Oh my
Fuck
god.
Fuck off, everybody. Anyway, I'll
have
you know my
that? I have.
I don't know.
That's
I'm tired. It's been a long day. Yeah, anyway, man. I want to talk about my current favorite name that starts with H and ends in T, which is Hart. My little Marshall cowboy man who definitely wears suede and has a long brown faded leather jacket that grazes his sexy muscled calves and his boots with definitely the spurs on the end. And I swear to God, this is canon. I did not make it up. I will find it in the text if I have to.
He's so pretty.
Mm-hmm. Love him.
And he's 11 feet tall or something.
Exactly. I want to climb him just like uppies.
Uppies? Yeah, for real.
Yeah,
for real. I don't think he was picked up by his father. Is that a good transition?
That's a really good transition. Yeah. 10 out of 10. Gold star. Go.
Because I want to talk about Hart's daddy issues because they are messy and nuanced, and we love a man with daddy issues. Mm-hmm. Hart doesn't know his real biological dad very well, which I'll get to in a second. But his father figure, who we'll talk about first, is the marshal who trained him. And I don't remember his name, which is poo-poo on me. I don't know, Tiff, if you remember it.
No uppies for you.
No uppies for me. But he watches his father figure die while he's like eaten alive by zombies, which is like really rough.
Rip.
That's rough, buddy.
And then we find out that like Hart's dad is a god. He's the warden, which is like he's who greets souls on the way to the afterlife, basically. And Hart like dies and meets his dad. Like there's this whole thing where all of this stuff happens in the same sort of mess of like losing his father figure, meeting his father, understanding that he's a demigod, and just like, oh buddy, I know why you're so tortured. You like really dealing with it, my guy.
This is one that I cannot fix.
No.
It was a lot going on, and I just was like, can you just go make out with Mercy, please? I don't really want to hear about your daddy issues.
Tiff, do you remember what his name is? The marshal's name?
I found it. It feels silly, but it's Bill. His name is Bill. You can remember the name Bill.
They're totally cowboys. They're so cowboys.
They're so cowboy coded. Yeah. Because his boss, Diane, is like, you've had four partners in 3 years after Bill died. And he's like, ah, rah, rah,
rah, rah. Cowboy cop. That drink whiskey. Mm-hmm.
They do drink whiskey. They drink a lot of whiskey.
I think the other thing that maybe we kind of touched upon about the tropes, but speaking of Hart, is that he's grumpy. He's very grumpy and he's crabby.
He's a quibby.
But also you think that he's very grumpy on the outside, but I think he's a teddy bear on the inside. And because I know this, I think that he has a heart. Sorry, no, I'm 12. But I saved this quote because I think it shows you have a heart because mean people don't love dogs and he loves dogs. So therefore he's a good person. And the quote from the book is, let me ask you something. If you had to choose between saving my life or saving a dog, which would you choose? And it's the dog.
It's Mercy who says the dog. Who says which quote? It's Mercy that says the dog, right?
Yes.
He got it.
Everyone's on the same page. I was just trying to remember. Yeah. No. Yes, they're dog people.
They're dog people. Everybody who's a dog person is a good person for the most part.
I really appreciate the like little note about Hart constantly like fidgeting with his hat. Not me falling in love with yet another beheaded fictional man, but like, okay. But I thought it was so like sweet and cute how he like fidgets with it like enough that it's commented on like multiple times. And it's so sweet. And I love how hard and quickly he falls for Mercy. And once he like lets himself open up to the possibility of that, like he goes so quickly from being in like denial to like, I hate this woman and her perfect tits. Wow. I hate her so much. And then he has like one good interaction with her and she's like, I am in love with her. And he straight up tells Duckers he's in love with her. And that's like so not what he's expecting. He's just like, what the fuck? That's so much more than I thought. And I just love it. It's 10 out of 10, 12 out of 10. Best man.
So here for all this. Well, now that we've officially chatted through our sunshiny Mercy and our grumpy Hart, they're more nuanced than that, we know that. I think we should talk about their relationship. I would love to open with another little quote that I adore, which is how they greet each other. I'm gonna just read this really quick. Most people start with hello. Hello, heartache, she sighed. Hello, merciless, he bent down to kiss her. Hello, merciful, she smiled at him, dimples and all. Hello, sweetheart. Like, stop it. That's so fucking cute. The combo of like the nicknames they used to call each other when they hated each other to what they end up calling each other. And I just love the play on words that Megan did. It's so adorable.
It is so cute. Hot take. I don't love merciful. for her, like, sweetheart nickname, personally.
Yes.
But I can't think of anything better. Like, I can't think of anything better. And I do love...
Then she shouldn't have one.
Yeah. But I do love sweetheart.
Like, take it away. Take it away.
It sounds like she, like, went to the thesaurus or whatever and typed, like, M-E-R-C. And then, like, looked at the first three and was like, well, it's not going to be mercenary. And, like, went with merciless.
Yeah, I liked Merciless. I don't like Merciful.
Either of them.
Yeah.
Throw them away. That's my opinion.
Start from scratch. Start over. Rebrand.
Retry. Yeah. I do like Sweetheart and Heartache, though. I think those are cute.
Same. I do. I mean, I get that, like, Merciless and Merciful are, like, the inverse of each other. But if we don't feel like either.
Yeah.
I get it.
I get it. You. I don't love it. It's my biggest critique from this whole book is just that I don't like Merciful. That's it.
Take a one of those little label makers and just put something else over every iteration of it.
Honestly, yeah. Does Hart not give Wood call his partner like baby all the time?
Is there an issue with that?
No. Yeah, I'm saying that as like a positive thing. Like it's weird to me that he doesn't just call her baby like all the time.
Oh, yeah. I feel like yes, with you.
Yes, okay, good. Yes. I was like, wait, I thought that's kind of hot.
No. I feel like he would absolutely constantly be calling her like baby or baby girl.
Hey, baby.
Yeah.
Ooh, and I love baby that. Girl.
Call me baby, Eddie. Mm. I am your baby. I am
exactly
your
baby. Right.
I feel like the endearments we enjoy in books say a lot more about ourselves. Because that's probably true. I would hate that. I would not like to be called your baby girl. No. Like, I think that's just a me thing. So
I've gone by a nickname my entire life, literally since the day I came out of the womb. So nicknames for me are like whatever.
Is it Addie? What is it?
Addison.
Is your full name Addie?
Yeah. Addie is your family nickname. And my brothers have nicknames for me. We can discuss this at a later time. I'm just like, add another one to the pile. Okay.
Kelsey, you know, speaking about your brothers.
Do not do this right now.
I'm just kidding. I don't know your brothers well enough to do that. I was going to note that I really fucking appreciated how much that Hart loves her boobs. I too am a boob man.
If that was going to be the connection for my brothers, I was going to get real and comfy.
That's what it was. I'm sorry. But no, I was just trying to move on.
Her whole body. He worships her whole body, but like her beautiful big ass tits. He's obsessed with it. And I'm obsessed with that.
He's gorgeous. Obsessed with her tits on page one.
Yes, he truly is.
There's this quote that's, are her boobs infuriating? Because you definitely got an eye full of those. Like, it's just so good that it's, I think it was like, was it Duckers who said
it's
that?
Duckers. Yes,
yeah. Absolutely it was. Yes.
Like, it's just so obvious he's into those boobies.
Love the boobies.
So into those titties.
Yeah.
I had a moment when I was reading this where they do start talking about her tits like very soon in the book. And I was like, it was one of those moments where it works for a female author and it does not work for a male author. Because if this was written by a man and we were talking, like, and he wrote, are her boobs infuriating line that you just read, Kelsey, I'd be like, get the fuck out of here. I'm throwing this in the garbage.
Yes.
And I was
giving Nicholas Sparks.
Yeah. And I had to like reflect on that for a bit. I was like, is this bias? Is this bad? Like, should I feel this way or should I be mad at Megan? And then I was like, no, Megan has done no wrong. And then I continued.
I think we should be mad at men that they lost the right.
Truly.
You know? Yeah.
It's like, men don't deserve that right.
Like, I'm like, it's on them, honestly. We want boo appreciation. Just don't be a dick about it.
Yeah.
I'll allow objectification from women. Like, that's fine. Yeah. Because I trust you not to do anything bad with it. It's like, that's what it is.
Truly. I love this reflection, though. We are truly a scholarly podcast. Good on us.
True. I'm a boom man. What can I say?
I love that about you.
So speaking of boobs.
Well, anyway. So, should be scholarly. Spicy moments? How we feel? Was it sexy enough? That's the question.
I definitely feel like it's a book with spice, not a spicy book.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But it's got some good spice. Like, I would give like two spicy peppers.
It's not a spice worth waiting for. You got to work your way up to it.
Yeah. And I have a certain thing we're going to call. We're doing a callback, baddies. That quote that Megan signed on my bookmark, have a nice wholesome dinner. I think we should have Crossland read the quote from which it came. Shall we?
About boobies?
Okay.
It's not about boobies.
Crossland is something he's about to vomit.
All right, crossing this is a quote to set you up. This is a quote that Hart is saying. Hart is the one saying this, so I'm gonna need you to embody Marshall Zombie Hunter Cowboy Man Hottie Boy.
But if we are going to inform your dad that we're dating, I'd rather have it be over a nice, wholesome dinner, not when I'm leaving your place first thing in the morning because I've spent the night worshiping at the altar of your glorious, beautiful, intoxicating pussy.
Mm. My cousin says pussy. I just feel like it takes a year off my life.
I'm going to be the one.
Mine too.
You didn't finish the quote. What does Mercy
say? Yeah, you gotta keep going. Oh. Sorry.
Oh my. Mercy tittered, her cheeks heating.
Tittered is a horrible word, too.
I have the jitter.
Tittered is a great word.
I think what's funny is, like, tittered. This book didn't give me that kind of feeling. Sometimes you read something, it's like, oh, I got the glues. But, like, this was, like, a one or two pepper for me. I'm also on a cowboy rodeo romance kick right now, and so that's, like, doing the horizontal hanky panky on a bull. So like they were over here. So this was like kind of cute and subdued, but when Cross read it, it was like five freaking peppers because now I'm uncomfy and my face is red and I need to walk away for a minute. And never need to hear Cross say pussy ever again in my whole life.
I just appreciate meeting Megan Bannon, her going and me telling her, I haven't read your book yet, but I've seen it.
Wait, Kelsey, you met Megan Bannon?
Are you messing with it? Let me bring this up again. Let me just explain this. I promise I'm saying something about it. I love meeting this woman being like, I haven't read her book. And she's like, you're going to like this later. I think she literally said to me, you'll thank me later. And I was like, oh, okay. This woman.
She read you so hard.
She was like, I know you're a horny little slut. Here you go. Like, come on, girl. Like, I love that.
Cross, how you doing over there?
You look Addie, like a cool guy who has chill day.
I will say, though, when we're talking about this and how spicy it was, I feel like it just depends on who you picture or, like, if you picture somebody or who you think about. So I just got to know, who would you guys fan cast as Hart? Because I have a weird hot take that's a little uncomfy that I'm going to admit. I don't know why, but Hart to me was Bill Nye, the science guy. Really lanky, really welcoming, kind of grumpy. But really welcoming, but also grumpy.
Like, oh my god!
Like recent Bill Nye, or like what age Bill Nye are we talking about?
Like Bill Nye, the science guy that we watched in seventh grade.
No, yeah, but you're spot on. Honestly, like I couldn't really I couldn't pick a fan cast for a while, and I don't think like a replica. I don't think Bill Nye should play him in the movie, but like that's the closest aesthetically that I can get.
Yes,
to me, he
like,
was
lanky,
just, like,
tall,
yeah, tall, a little strung out. I don't actually know if I found him hot in the book, even though I really liked
him. Yes, thank you.
Yeah, totally. Like, I felt like maybe his hair would be like, it looks like it was coiffed at one point, but then it's kind of like a little messy. He looks a little tired. He's got some like early wrinkles, you know, like, I don't know.
You get me.
I'm glad we're on the same wavelength.
Yeah, like kind of frizzy hair, needs a little deep condition.
It was very unoriginal, and it went full Adam Driver for me. So
what?
Tiff, sit.
Blonde.
Yeah. Sit on your hands, Tiff.
Sit on your hands.
No, but like, I don't know. I have no idea, to be honest, how his hair was mentioned. It could have been buzz cut for all I know, but in my brain it was
long, like, blonde hair.
He's blonde.
Like Bill Nye.
He's blonde.
Yeah. He's blonde.
Oh no.
Ew, what if he died
with gray eyes? But he's that good that you don't
even know.
He's more than his blonde hair.
Maybe it's
can
like
I just hear?
Chris,
let me paint a picture. I think it's like Jasper Hale, but with zombies and no Confederate Army. Like that's.
But I thought he was a big boy. Isn't he a big boy?
Jasper Hale is also very tall. He's taller than Edward Cullen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Scrawny Confederate guy?
No, he's not scrawny in the book, baby. We're talking about the book.
Yeah,
with Jasper Hale.
I'm due for a reread.
But does Hart look as absolutely shell-shocked as Jasper does? Because Jasper's look is always was it a fart or am I going to poop?
Again, we're talking about book.
Not Jackson Rathbone. We are talking about Jasper Hale.
Yeah.
It's okay. It's fine. Glad to if you get it.
I get it. I agree. That is also about who I pictured. But like, yeah, not a Confederate, but Jasper.
Exactly.
Sure.
But like exactly not exactly. A Confederate.
Exactly.
Quick question while we're here on Twilight. And speaking of Confederates, which led me to think about
we've arrived.
Which led me to think about cops. Is Hart a cop? Ooh. Would we consider him to be a cop?
No. I consider him a Texas Ranger, which was kind of a yes, kind of a no.
Yeah.
He isn't a cop because he doesn't enforce laws in town. He's more like protection for the town from the entities that are outside of the town.
So he's army.
He's army, but
he's National Guard.
He's National Guard more than army.
he's soccer.
Okay. He's Tim Walls.
He's Tim Walls. Honestly,
okay, now I'm the Tim Walls. Tim Walls.
That's blonde, buff Tim Walls. That's
what is
who we're
Tim Walls like, like a 35-year-old. Tim Walls, 35 years old.
It's just his old school pictures.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. Nope. No. Delete.
I don't think he's a cop, personally.
But, like, maybe a little.
No.
He's cop adjacent.
But doesn't he, like, turn into the sheriff?
Yeah.
Wasn't he going to, like, become the sheriff at the end of the book? Or was that just, like, kind of implied?
He's elected to that position, but it's not. Anyway, we're getting lost in the weeds again.
Stuck
in
the weeds.
Yeah, that's fair. Sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
We need to keep balance. Let's keep balancing. Let's balance on and talk about the things that we find cute versus like more somber and serious. And sure, if you want to say that it's spooky in some way, I'll entertain that thought.
I mean, I think for me, like Adam and I were talking about, it's not really spooky. I didn't have to hide under the covers. Like not once. I didn't have to like close my eyes and turn the page. So I feel like if you are a worrywart, if you don't want to feel like you can't go to bed that night, this book is totally fine. The only thing that's like spooky about it is that she's dealing with people who passed away, and also that there's like kind of these zombies. But A, for one, the people who passed away, she deals with such a reverence that it's chill. And then second of all, the zombies, you just kind of feel bad for them because you know that it's like not tight. They don't want to be doing it. So I don't know. It's not spooky. It's just sweet. It's good. Read it.
I feel like it's spooky adjacent. It's very low on the spooky meter, but you know, it feels seasonal. That's more.
It's giving season.
I was a little scared. I'm just a baby.
Cute. What were you scared by? I'm a Disney adult.
So here's my biggest thing is that I have very, very vivid dreams. So if I read something that's very vivid before I go to bed, I have really spooky dreams and then I'm up in the middle of the night and then I can't fall back to sleep. So I had very awful dreams one night of reading this book and then I walked away from it and then I read it during the day and then I was fine. So after I got the You've Got Mail references and after I started getting more of that and less of the zombie apocalypse, people getting hit in the appendix to die and disappearing and getting zombied, I think once I got past that and into You've Got Mail romance stuff, I was completely fine. So I would say as your certified Disney adult, scared of absolutely everything, sleeps with a nightlight person, anybody can handle this. I don't think it's that I don't think it's that spicy, that spooky.
I would not even put this on.
Tiff is like,
Well, no, I respect your journey, but I personally would not put this anywhere, even on the spookometer. It's not spooky. It's so fluffy. It's so like, there is maybe a little bit of tension, but I think that it's more, I don't find the concept of death to be scary. And I think that the like scary elements are so, or if you can call them that, like the ghouls, they're so like balanced with the like kind of light silliness and the mystery behind them and why are they around and the appendix stuff. Like to me, it's fluffy, mysterious. It's not scary.
Yeah, it was cute.
I feel like maybe the part that made this spooky for me was that they did have kind of like unusual jobs and they did have like unusual career paths and like they were doing things during the day. Like they didn't have spooky nighttime activities and then they went back to their real life. It was like kind of spooky all the time, but they kind of reflect their personalities, I feel like, and their character journeys. So I feel like I'd be really curious, especially Tiff, you've read this like 5 times, you said.
Definitely more than 5, like, but okay,
then more than 5 times, like how would you think that their jobs, like, what do you think their jobs say about, like, the life and death aspect of this? Because I feel like that's something I'm kind of, like, curious about as someone who was too scared to read it. Is, like, I didn't get a chance to go fully into that kind of concept.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's really interesting to see, like, Mercy is dealing with familial grief already, but she has this positive relationship with death and the afterlife. And so she, like, is very comfortable with confronting that grief. And then Hart is very much not. Like, he is very, like, caged off. He carries his mom's key with him because he doesn't want to, like, put down roots, so he doesn't have a home. Like, I think that the idea of there being an undertaker and a immortal sort of marshal is, like, an interesting dichotomy to work with.
Yeah, his Hart's job definitely requires him to be a bit more emotionally detached, which makes sense, you know, in what we've talked about with him and his approach to Mercy and sort of unpacking his feelings as he goes, which, you know, it makes sense that he's shutting himself out from relationships and from going after what's best for him. On the flip side, Mercy's work is all about dealing with grief and dealing with probably the most human experience of death, which makes her a lot more touch with her own vulnerability. And obviously there's probably gender stuff to that too, but, you know, she's well suited to her job. I think they both are, and I think their jobs have informed how they interact with each other in a really great way.
I agree.
Yeah, you mentioned, I think, Tiff, you mentioned the keys, Hart carrying the key. And I just want to note, I found the keys are this connection to where your undertaking is happening when you die. And, like, you need to have, if you're keyless, then, like, that's what Mercy's dealing a ton with. But I found it really fascinating. Death is so prevalent in their culture, and that you are always carrying with you what happens to you when you die so that you don't become a zombie. Like, that it's wild to me to think that, like, this world exists within this prevalent thought process of knowing exactly what's going to happen to you when your life ends. Like, for that to be so part of your everyday that you have your key with you, or you have a key saved. It's fascinating. It's really interesting that Megan chose that. And then, fun fact, both Tiff and I have keys from Megan. Just want to plug that in.
Oh, yeah,
because your besties dropped that.
That is so cool. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Kelsey got me one, and I then bought a new, like, fancy chain, and I attached it to the chain, and now I wear it every day. Like, I wear it every single day. It makes me so happy. I love the keys, and I love the system where they talk about, like, essentially having, like, ofrendas by their doors, and Mercy is, like, appalled that Hart doesn't have an altar to put his mom's key on, because there are several times I think that they, like, dip their fingers in, like, salt water and touch the keys of their departed loved ones when they get home. And I think that that's such a, like, a beautiful, interesting way to tie in, like, real world practices within death. And for many reasons, this idea connected with me on, like, on a deep level. And that's part of why I've read it so much. But, like, I just really liked the bringing together of these two people.
Yeah, I agree. It was beautiful. The rituals they have around death, and the way that they would, I always pictured, like, doing there's a part in Catholic Mass where you, like, make the cross on your forehead and your lips and then your chest. For whatever reason, I always pictured that symbol happening whenever they, like, walk in past the threshold. It helped build up a little bit more of that otherwise partially vague world that Megan created. Totally. And I do wonder now, at the end of the story, we kind of learn a little bit about some complications happening with the gods in the world, with, like, protecting this door that the souls are supposed to walk through. So I have questions, which might be answered in books 2 and 3, I hope.
I'm not spoiling nothing.
Thank you. I'll do my own homework. Yeah.
Well, and just to circle back to the question of, you know, like, I know we're talking about jobs and life and death in the world, but it's interesting too to think about Megan's choices around, like, the zombie characters that exist in their world. And, like, I know we talked about how Hart is a protector, but I kind of get, like, a giggle out of the fact that she chose to make the appendix the thing that, like, the zombies, like, inhabit.
Yeah.
And that you need to have your appendix ruptured so that you don't get turned into a zombie. I just thought that was so silly. You know, the whole, like, what are appendixes for? Yeah. And it's like,
you don't get turned into a zombie organ. I did not even think about that. That's so funny. That's really clever.
It was fun of her to do that. I got a little giggle out of it. Just a very light way to think about death.
Truly.
So silly.
Well, she presents it in this, like, beautiful way that everybody has these really deep and complex relationships with life and death. And then also it's like, oh, also, if you don't want to be a zombie, you got to stab the appendix, like, a bunch. like a bunch, yeah, the like stabbing the appendix, and then the fact that like that's part of the mystery, right? Like the the rival undertaking company is like essentially like doing surgery and bringing these folks like back to life, and that also has to do with the appendix. And it, and then like the other story of this book alongside of this like walk with death and these walks with grief is also like, hey, maybe having essentially like a big box store for death is not like the best way to reflect our ideals about death. And then it becomes like kind of like anti-capitalist in a way, which I think is really interesting and cool.
Yes, I love a good anti-capitalist plot line. I loved it. I loved that Amazon or like Walmart was essentially the big bad in this book.
Yeah. Actually, it was Fox. F-O-S-O-X.
It's just, it's so classic. It's like classic Hallmark movie or classic, you know, rom-com, obviously. But it's just also feels very topical today where all these small business owners are being pushed out of business by these kind of deceptive and shitty business practices. And I loved seeing that alongside the cute stuff. There was a quote in the book that I really liked when I believe Heart Mercy, it could be somebody else, but I think Heart Mercy are talking about, you know, if they can actually make a change in the world or if Cunningham's just going to take everything over. And one of them says, maybe the question we should both be asking ourselves is, what do we have the power to change? And I think that's really beautiful. Start small. Aww. Vote in the election. Yeah. Most importantly, vote in your local elections. Thank you.
You can mail in your ballots and you can mail letters. Let's get back to letters.
Yeah. Letters. You know so who bad. Mails letters?
These
Heart
two.
And Mercy. These two fuckers.
These two fuckers.
I know we've talked a bit about their writing already, but and we talked a little bit about like Mercy editing herself, but I want to know more about how we felt the letters allowed these both Mercy and Heart to reveal their true selves to each other. And how do you feel about how it unfolded?
Honestly, I think this was one of the first books in a long time that made me like giggle and kick my legs and highlight every single thing in my Kindle and upload it to Goodreads. And I think that I liked how she wrote in such a conversational tone, especially in the letters that were back and forth, because I felt like somebody was sitting there at their table at night writing the little letters, or like I could see them like writing something and then scratching them out. I just felt like it was so almost relatable in a world where they cannot be relatable, almost, if that makes sense, where you feel like you kind of understand what they're going through because it's like that secondhand cringe in a way that's like almost lovable. I don't know. I felt like this. I don't know if anyone else felt like this about the letters too, but I felt like I just wanted to give them a hug and say like, they're going to respond. Like it's going to be okay.
Yep, I completely agree. But I am going to talk about the animals that delivered the mail, because, oh my God, how fucking cute were they? I could not. And every time they'd come on the stage, I'd be like, yes, they're back. They're here. And there was this cute little owl who was all proper and his feathers would get all ruffled and people weren't respectful to him. And I was like, you know what? Set your boundaries. Set your boundaries. I love this. He was wonderful. And then there was the other like alcoholic one. He was cute too. He just wanted like a shot every time he'd drop off a letter. And then he'd be like, are you going to pay me, you cheap fuck? And it was just, I love it. It's like, I literally pictured Owl from Winnie the Pooh.
And I do.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Cute. And then for the other guy who, what are they called, Tiff?
I was going to ask Tiff, how do you pronounce the name?
Nimklim. And then, of course, Nim-klim. I thought about the cute otters from Crescent City.
Yes.
And it just made me wish that they talked. And now I'm like, they're those otters connected. Need to be speaking roles.
I'm telling you, Bryce Quinlan's going to show up for a beverage.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Via otter delivery. So, yes. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you, sweet, sweet Megan, for including that. It just, I need to get a sticker of them and put it on my Kindle right next to the otters of Crescent City mail. Thank you so much.
I love the Nimklim. I think they're so fun. And reading the second one, there is more to do with the
really?
Nimklim. Yes.
Is it just about
like,
them?
It's like a main plot point.
No. No. Boo.
Yeah.
But they are like a major plot point. It's not about them, but it. I mean, there is a Nimklim that is, I would argue, like a primary character.
Mm. Yes.
Ooh, yay.
And she's cool. A hedgehog.
Oh, cute. I want them all to fall in love.
Cute. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, please. Yes. Well, everyone's been very good. Addy especially. So I feel like I'm going to sneak. It's time to sneak in your treat, which is a few letter writing centric bookies for you to take and do with you.
I'm ready.
With the first, which, you know, and we've already discussed, is Divine Rivals by Rebecca Ross.
Yes,
obviously.
Chef.
Another that I read recently that Lindsay recommended is Thank You for Listening by Julia Whelan. Oh. No relation to Addy.
It's actually, sorry, pause. It's Julia Whelan because she is an audio book narrator.
Oh,
yes.
Thank you. Thank you for the correction. Julia Whelan. Never mind.
Thank you.
Definitely no relation to Addy. They write texts to each other. And I love, it's like it's one of the most conversational texting books that I have read. I sometimes feel like texting can be so weird and cringy in books, and she just nails it. It feels so natural and fun and light. Another is This Is How You Lose the Time War by Amal El-Mohtar and Max Gladstone. I probably am not pronouncing that correctly either. I don't think they do audiobooks, so I don't know how to say it correctly. I haven't read this one yet. I literally just checked it out from the library, though. I've heard amazing things. I know plenty of other baddies have read it. One I have read that I love is The Flat Share by Beth O'Leary. They share a apartment together, or a flat. It's in the UK, but they have opposite schedules. So they sleep in the same bed, but one works a night shift and one works a day shift. So they talk to each other on post-it notes that they leave in the apartment. That cute. One's really fun and cute. Any others?
And then I have a special shout out. Yes. Not a book, but an important movie to consider with Grumpy Sunshine. Do not forget the classic and beloved tale, A Cinderella Story, featuring Hilary Duff. So
laugh out loud.
Yeah.
Laugh out loud. Thank you very much.
I do love the T9 texting in that one.
Relatable. I was really good at doing that under the table.
That poor girl. She had such a shitty family.
Which is like so opposite from this book, like especially Mercy and her relationship with her like family, as that continues on. I feel like we see how her relationships evolve through this book and how they kind of shape her decisions and stuff. And then I think that we see kind of the opposite with Hart and how his lack of blood family leads to some interesting stuff with like him and his boss, Alma, and the found family there with her wife, and his found family then with Duckers, and then his found family with Mercy's family, too. I think that, like, the family dynamics in this book are really interesting. We talked about it a little bit, but I have a feeling that there are more things for us to say.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm always a found family sucker, a sucker for some good found family in a book. I also thought Mercy's blood family was cute and like realistically dysfunctional while still being charming. It wasn't like so dysfunctional you're like, this is a problem and I don't like reading about it. But they also weren't so perfect that you're like, okay, eye roll, like who are you kidding? You know, like this is boring. And also her dad was alive, which is great because a lot of times our favorite female protagonists have dead dads. So congrats. I hated that the family had so many expectations for Mercy and that she was like basically the family therapist. Same thing, you know, oldest daughter energy, like we were saying. I didn't think it was fair. Her brother kept making her keep his secret about the school stuff, even though it was really sweet of her to do so. Her sister seemed like perfectly content to have Mercy handle literally everything for the family, which I hated and like made me really upset as she was just kind of like running around doing whatever. Obviously there's character arcs and this changes, but you know, Mercy's loyalty to her family was really cute, but I really wanted her to just go to some therapy and embrace her power more, which she kind of does.
Yes.
And I was just frustrated that her siblings and family kind of like relied on her so much that it stopped her from pursuing her dreams, because to them it was like unfathomable that she could have a purpose in life outside of like being there to deal with them. And then when she shared their dreams, they were all like shocked that she had other interests. And they came around. But that was an interesting dynamic to navigate. And I'm thankful Bannon included it.
No, I'm totally right there with you, Lindsay. I was super invested and intrigued by Zeddy's character. I got really mad at her brother a lot. whole like, oh, I'm just holding this position for you while you're off at school, even though you're going to come back and do it. And he's like, well, I don't want it. But she's like, you do want it. Like, you're supposed to take the family business, but I want the family business. And, you know, that whole background of undertaking normally being passed from father to son and Mercy carrying all the responsibilities just as an interim, even though it's something that's so fulfilling for her. Daddy was never going to want it. And I'm glad appreciate the way that it was resolved, but it made me want to punch him in the face.
Yeah.
For a good chunk of the book.
It really gave like, I say this as we're all like zillennials or whatever, right? For the most part, he just gave very like stereotypical, unfair to Gen Z vibes of like, I don't care. And it's really cute that I don't want to do this and that I want to do something else. And thanks for fixing it for me. And that was annoying. And like, instead of Mercy just feeling comfortable being like, hey, actually, what if I took the business because I like it and Zeddy doesn't and I'm very competent at this, she has to tiptoe around her dad's feelings about passing it on to Zeddy versus her. And then she also has to tiptoe around Zeddy's feelings, but not being able to take responsibility for his own wants and needs. And like, where the hell is that fair? So congratulations, Megan. You wrote a very realistic family dynamic in the year of our Lord 2024. I'm proud of you.
Truly.
Get it, girl. Thank you, Lindsay. You as always articulated what was living inside my brain, just kind of like going good ding and ding and ding and ding and ding and ding, just around and around and around. Speaking of that, and Zeddy, and he sometimes would make my blood boil, and sometimes I would just, my heart would go out to him. There are some other characters in this story besides Heart and Mercy that definitely deserve our attention. So I want to just open up the space. Who else were you either admiring or feeling a little bit like, oh my God, about? Because I know we have some thoughts.
I do. Zeddy is so annoying, but I do love him and Duckers. I think that
they're
so like cute, annoying, messy gays. It's awesome. Yes. I love them.
They're
so
well characterized for sure. I like them a lot.
Oh, absolutely. And I love them both too. Little Penrose Duckers, that goody two shoes.
He's so cute.
Wanting to suck up to, he's adorable. I just love both of them and I love their relationship. And I felt like their relationship as a side plot still felt very nuanced and considered. And I think Megan just handled it really well. And I loved it.
I do need to see if there's anything on AO3 about them.
Oh, bless.
Oh, I'm sure.
There's nothing anywhere about this book. That's part of why I wanted to talk about it. This, I feel like, is such a slept on.
Yes. Yes. There's no fan art. There's nothing. There's like no, it makes me crazy.
That's so interesting.
It's so slept on. Like, nobody acknowledges this book as being like the work of art that it is, and it makes
me
upset.
If you are an artist, because, like, please draw them, please.
I'm begging,
please.
Because,
oh,
like,
my God.
Speaking of side characters, like Mercy's dad and his willingness to like change like tradition and do what was best for Mercy, I feel like that fixed my daddy issues.
He was such a Disney dad too. I mean, a lot of Disney dads are on Alive, but there's, I don't know, like, he wanted to be there. He wanted to help her.
I can't speak to that because I am not a Disney adult.
Like, he wanted to be there. He wanted to help her. He wanted to do what was best for her. And I don't know. I just loved him. I wanted to give him a big old hug.
Crazy old Maurice. Crazy old Maurice.
Oh.
I also want to shout out, and Tiff's going to have to help me out with some names here, the sweet married couple that were friends with Heart. That was like the garden and the chickens, and they like definitely made their own bread. What were their names?
Oh, are you talking about Alma and Diane?
Yes. Oh my God. I adored them. And there's one particular reason. They gave the energy of just like, just keeping reaching out your hand, right? Like, you know, you have a friend who's like going through it emotionally, like kind of as a closed door at the moment, but they just kept inviting him over and just like waiting for the opportunity, waiting for the moment where he finally like grabbed it back. And I just think that was so beautiful that they had such a true friendship that it wasn't, it wasn't fickle and it wasn't offended by his own mental health and his own grief. And they were just patient with what he was going through. So that was a really good writing of beautiful friendship. So yay.
Mm-hmm. We love some stable sapphics. We love some stable sapphics in your corner.
Yeah. Everybody needs that.
So you know what else I need? I'm just going to make a hard old transition. Everybody's ratings for this book.
Ooh,
taking a hard right turn. Because I have been sitting here girl the whole time. And I just need to know. I will share mine with you so that you may think about yours. Mine was 15 out of 5.
Ooh.
I had 53 highlights on Goodreads. And I ordered a physical copy the day that I finished it for my bookshelf. It was really cute. I highly recommend. And thank you, Taylor.
Yeah. Because Addy and I shared a brain cell this whole podcast.
We do. Is it your turn this week or mine?
Specifically this episode. this is my turn. Hush, hush. I'm just going to say it as well. Like, 1,000,000 out of 5. I absolutely adored it. It was, I would totally read it again. It's a big sweater, big glass of red wine. You have the fireplace on YouTube TV. Oh,
your favorite
TV.
Vibes.
Like, just going, you know? So it is my favorite vibes. I loved it. I would totally read it again.
I'm right there with you both. 5 out of 5. I mean, like, for me, this is a love story between a big titty undertaker who loves her family and a soft-spoken marshal with daddy issues who hunts their world's equivalent of zombies. What more do you want?
Nothing more.
Yeah. That's it. I get why Tiff reads this 1,000,000 times. Like, I understand.
Could ask for anything more. It was great. I had so much fun. I really liked reading it. I couldn't put it down. It left me wanting more in a good way and a bad way. So I'm going to say 4 out of 5.
Yeah, that's super valid.
Nice.
I think I give it a perfect 5 out of 5. I've been talking Ooh. About it this whole time. I convinced all of my friends to read it for our book mm-hmm. show. So I think it's mm-hmm. safe to say that it is 5 out of 5. It was in my top 5 books of last year. I love it so much. I reread it pretty consistently. I read the sequel when it came out in about 5 hours. Like, I waited for it to drop on my Kindle, and then I read until 4 in the morning, and then I went to bed for a little bit, and then I woke up and I finished it. Like, it's so good. It gives me so many good, happy feelings. 5 out of 5.
Amazing.
Absolutely.
Is this the highest rated book we've had on the podcast as a collective?
So we got to talk about ratings at some point. That's another episode as itself, because
it is.
Do we rate the books that we've rated?
Well, and also, like, some people rate a 5 and some people rate a 3, and some people are right and some people are wrong.
Yeah.
Stop. I'm just kidding.
Opinions are fair.
Yeah.
Well, you want to know someone who is always wrong?
Well,
his name's Crossland. Segment.
I was just going to say, so, Crossland, here's the thing. We love to tease you, and we love to just see what you know. So we have prepared a little Meg Ryan trivia for you. And
Meg Ryan fall. Meg Ryan fall.
Here's the thing. Meg you completed Ryan your brat summer. We loved seeing you at Charlie XCX on stage with Troye Sivan and Addison Rae. You looked great. But now we need to know, are you a Meg Ryan fall girly?
I mean, I really like Meg Ryan. Is that the question here?
We're going to find
really
out if you actually
all think about her boobs. Movies. Not often, no.
Stop, sorry, Crossland, I didn't mean to interrupt you. You were asked a question, I'll let you answer it.
No, yeah, all I was saying is, like, I remember watching, like, the Nora Ephron rom-coms growing up as well, so, okay. Yeah.
All right, well, we shall see what you think here. Your first one's quite easy, and if you don't get this right, I'll be very sad. What kind of dog does Uh-oh. Tom Hanks have during You've Got Mail?
Come on.
Oh my God.
Who am I?
We mentioned it.
Who is she?
Golden Retriever.
There we yeah. go. All right, well, no more hints.
I was trying to remember, because in Sleepless in Seattle, he also has a dog yes. with his son, Jonah, mm-hmm. right? Because he moves from Chicago, or to Chicago?
Mm-mm.
No, from Chicago to Seattle. Anyway, yeah. Sorry, side note. But I think he has a Dalmatian in that one.
So what's your answer?
Speaking of Jonah.
More? Golden, yeah.
Okay, speaking of Jonah.
Great.
What cultural celebration is it when Jonah calls the radio station about his dad?
Christmas Eve, right?
Good job.
Nice. What truly happened when Harry met Sally?
Ooh. So I genuinely don't remember. When Harry Met Sally is the one that I've watched the least. Mm. Sleepless in Seattle is the one that I've watched the most.
I have to accept that.
So
I feel like with a hint you could get this.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're in college.
So they meet because they're going somewhere.
Is it a road trip?
Mm-hmm.
Correct.
I feel like I've watched this one since the other.
I'll give it to you. Don't worry. I'll put you out of your misery. She drives him home for Christmas break.
Okay.
This is my favorite Meg Ryan movie. So if you get it wrong, I will cry.
Oh God. Oh no.
What?
Is it Anastasia?
Animated movie is Meg Ryan in?
Oh,
yes!
Nice.
Yes!
Good job.
That was great.
How did I? Just because you said it was your favorite, I was like, it's probably Anastasia, right? Like, that just made sense to me.
Yeah, that was awesome.
I got such a jack of adrenaline there that, like, I freaked out.
Cross's favorite's obviously Tiff. Moving on.
Oh, my God.
both of you and Lindsay is right here.
That's fair. Grassland, what is the most iconic line from When Harry Met Sally?
Oh, man. Genuinely, I don't know. Again, When Harry Met Sally.
I'll give you a hint. It's from that scene. It's from that scene.
I think part of the reason that I've seen it the least is because I saw these for the first time and multiple times when I was like approaching like Indian high school. Hmm. And yeah, I think that was the one that my mom like didn't watch it all together by comparison. So
okay, well,
I think that's why I don't.
Yeah, that's fair. The answer is I'll have what she's having after she does the whole diner moaning scene. Yeah, but nice try.
Damn it.
All right.
You're close.
Okay. What is Meg Ryan's most recent film? I had to look this up, so I didn't know it.
Because she took a big break in like the mid 2000s, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
Right after her divorce from Dennis Quaid.
My God, you know she was so
married
much
to Dennis Quaid.
Yeah, and she's the father of Jack.
Jack Quaid.
Yeah, Jack Quaid. That's she's not in Top Gun Maverick.
Nope.
But she is in like the credits, but I don't remember beyond that. I really wouldn't know. My brain says...
Yeah, I'm going to cut you off. It's called What Happens Later. I haven't seen it. We should all watch it. Moving on.
Let's do it.
Cool. Mm-hmm.
Cross, this is an easy one. If you don't get this, I'll be mad. What's the name of her bookstore in You've Got Mail?
Oh, didn't we just talk about this earlier?
Mm-hmm.
Anyone else hear that weird clicking, whirling noise coming from his brain?
as I'm like loading
I hear dying
shop around the corner right?
Yes. Good job. We're proud of you. Sometimes you just need some thinking time.
The shop around the broken corner. Clock is right twice a day.
Just kidding.
But never about When Harry Met Sally. Never about
yeah,
when
that
Harry
clock's
Met Sally.
Arms fell off. Okay, finish this line, Crossland. Yeah. Don't you love New York in the fall? It just makes you want to go out and buy.
Oh no.
That's what you want to buy?
3, 2, 1.
I'm so devastated.
School supplies.
Yeah. Fuck. All right.
It really doesn't make you want to go out and buy school supplies, if I'm being honest.
No. Unfortunately.
That was a good one.
All right, last one. And then you're free from Meg Ryan Trivia Hell. Who is the writer behind many of Meg Ryan's biggest movies?
Nora Ephron, right?
Good job. Yeah. When you said that earlier, I was like, damn it. We give you one. All right. I hope if you were listening that you beat Cross at most of the ones that he sucked at. And if you did, please tag us on Instagram and let us know how many you got right. How many questions were there out of curiosity? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 questions. If you got 9 out of 9, you beat Cross and you will get a prize.
You will not get a prize.
And if you,
we will not be sending you a prize.
It's called We Clap For You. That's the prize. We'll go like this.
But you do not have the clap. We clap for you, but you don't have the clap. Just to
Might be a threat. I don't know.
All right. Well, I love that we went the Meg Ryan route because obviously You've Got Mail is on brand for this book. I don't think we've mentioned it yet, but the second book in the series, The Undermining of Twyla and Frank, is also inspired by another Meg Ryan movie, which is When Harry Met Sally, questioned. And then the third book, which isn't out yet, The Undercutting of Rosie and Adam. It's not, I don't know if this is published anywhere, but here's some hot deets. When I went to her launch party and book signing, my question asked was about her love of, you know, these movies, these Tom Hanks inspired movies. And if the third one had inspiration, she said it's not a direct retelling of anything, but that it has Joe versus the volcano energy. And I love that.
I'm so excited.
I am too. I am too.
I don't even know what to do with that information.
I know, right? It's like...
Well, speaking of that, it's time for us to close out. So how about we close out with which Tom Hanks are you writing to? And what is your chosen Nillikim who's going to send your letter to him?
That's a great question, Tiff. I love that.
mine would be Tom Hanks in Castaway, because it would solve literally every problem in that movie. There is no like sexy ulterior motive here. Like, if I could deliver a message to him by a giant whale who's like, hey, I can get you home, and then he jumps on the whale's back, the movie's over.
I did it. I fixed it.
Good job. You solved the puzzle. You solved the riddle.
I'm taking Lindsay if I'm ever in a zombie apocalypse, because she'll know what to do.
Lindsay wins the honey pot. Lindsay wins the honey pot.
I would do Joe Fox. You've got mail.
F-O-X.
I don't know. I just love him because he has this sense of humor that makes me laugh every single time I read him or every time I see him. And it's just like every single time I just have these little giddy feelings, even though he's like a grown ass man. And my messenger animal is his golden retriever because I love golden retrievers. And that's the only excuse I really have.
I love it.
I feel like it should be a fox because F-O-X.
F-O-X.
Mm-hmm. Two on the neck.
Can you spell another animal for me?
Too close.
F-O-X.
O-X. Good job, honey.
Can you spell cat?
F-O-X. O-X. I am going with A League of Their Own because I want Tom Hanks to know that tears are okay. There can be crying in baseball.
Crying in baseball.
And I would definitely be sending Forky from Toy Story 4, another Tom Hanks movie, to deliver the message. So it's a little spooky. It's a little creepy.
I didn't finish it.
I'm doing a deep cut, and I'm going to say the Carly Rae Jepsen music video version of Tom Hanks for the I Really Love You music video. And my messages are being delivered via Raven, as the gods intended.
Nice.
Incredible.
So good. I am going to go with Tom Hanks from The Da Vinci Code. Ooh. He's a mystery man, and I'd like him to solve the secrets of my body.
Tom Hanks?
Yeah, baby.
He's a classy, sexy man. I do love him.
Dilf.
As for my little messenger creature, I am visualizing a tiny lizard that like sticks its tongue out and like sticks the letter to its tongue and flicks it at me and flicks it at Tom Hanks.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Is that because you're reading a Tangled retelling right now?
It's funny.
It totally is. It's just Pascal.
That must be what it is. But I wrote this before I started that book. So I feel like I just think the energy was like, I was feeling the vibes. And definitely, yeah, it's Pascal. He has an attitude, obviously. I did say originally that my lizard's name was, oh, thank you. See, this is a lizard and his name's Larry. But this is very much in line with Pascal.
I'm having uncomfortable feelings about Disney and flicking bodies. And
it was a non-sexual flicking tongue, to be clear.
It is now, or is not.
Tom Hanks can sexually flick his tongue
but
at
the
me.
Lizard's just like,
not the lizard. The lizard has the flicking tongue. Is
I'm fine with Tom Hanks, just for clarification. I'm fine with Tom Hanks flicking his tongue on you. A lizard. I have weird feelings because in my mind they're animated, and an animated lizard, there's just, we'll discuss it another time.
I just
Addie,
wanted
have you ever seen a real lizard?
Yeah.
Yes,
I have, but
she's been to Disney World.
But in my mind, the lizard is animated. It's cartoon.
Please, I need you to visualize the tongue for me. Like just a letter at the end of the
tongue.
You want
that in you?
Not
in me. No, she wants Tom to deliver the letters.
This is what's delivering the letter to me, Addie.
Where is it delivering the letter, Chelsea?
I was going to say.
Oh, Jesus.
Go. Cross.
Please curse. Change the subject.
Yeah, I'm going to go with the Tom Hanks classic movie in which he plays kind of a piece of shit. Elvis, wherein he plays the bad manager. And I would send him a hound dog because he ain't nothing but a hound dog.
All right. And on that note, lights.
Camera.
Peace out, everybody. Thanks, of course, to our podcast daddy and Laddie Crossland of Words and Whiskey for keeping us on tracks. Sometimes you never do that. And sounding as pretty as we look. Also, please check out all our links in the show notes. You can find our schedule, Patreon, previous episodes, and all the important socials in one convenient spot. And remember, hotties can read whatever they want. So chase your bliss, baby baddies.
Yeah.
Bye.
Especially when they're a lizard.
Stay
long tongue.
Yeah.
And go to the dentist.